Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
When you think about sports coverage, especially the recent Super Bowl, the biggest story in sports every year, when you think about sports coverage in the Super Bowl, you usually don't think religion angle. And yet, right before the Super Bowl, ESPN did a feature on the Seahawks quarterback, Russell Wilson, that not only found a religion angle, it found even more. Joining us to talk about that and the 10th anniversary of GetReligion.org and the New York Times, Terry Mattingly. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Let's talk first of all about the Super Bowl coverage, or the pre-Super Bowl coverage by ESPN. What in that coverage of Seahawks quarterback did you find interesting?
Well, it was really intriguing in the sense that I was not surprised that in writing a lengthy profile of Russell Wilson that ESPN managed to get his Christian faith into the story. Wilson is such an articulate Christian and such a humble and sharp young man that almost everybody gets that angle down. So that didn't surprise me, although Lord knows there are media that still ignore it. The Washington Post ran a huge feature the other day on Wilson and his late father and did not mention the faith angle once. I mean, so there are people who are capable of it, but I wasn't surprised that ESPN got the centrality of this young man's faith down. What surprised me in the story was that they saw past that one level and saw the next level of the story, which is here you have this bright, young, African-American, evangelical Christian, and now he's a hero in Seattle, which is kind of like the national capital of the religious unaffiliated and the nuns and kind of religious skepticism and alternative forms of religion. So what I thought was interesting was, even though they didn't go after this angle a lot, they didn't just settle for a simple story on Russell Wilson. They noted the irony that this very admirable young man is now becoming a hero to many people in secular Seattle, in a place where, you know, you wouldn't expect that to happen. And that they got into the fact that he's not kind of overt about his faith like Tim Tebow, but he never hides it. It got into a lot of his volunteer work, including some amazing anecdotes about his work in a children's hospital, work that goes way past the, you know, the meet and greet, shake their hands, hug their necks, get the photo and you're out of there level. They actually spent some time with this young man and in effect saw his faith in action. And that's exactly the kind of coverage that Get Religion always wants to praise. I mean, even though I didn't think the story was perfect, we still wanted to praise ESPN for getting both levels of the religion angle in the life of this young man.
Can you explain to me the difference, not necessarily at ESPN's coverage, but in the general coverage, between kind of outspoken Christian quarterback for the Seahawks, and then even though Tebow was not there with the Broncos, he was there in commercial form,
yeah,
the outspoken evangelical Christian quarterback. Is it just the difference of the fact that a year ago, 2 years ago, Tim Tebow was from the heart of evangelicalism?
Huh. Well, I don't know. The main thing to me is it's pretty common to see a sports story that does what I call playing the God card, to where you're reading along like a story about Michael Vick and his recovery from Princeton. You know, from prison. And right in the middle of the story, you get this kind of, well, I prayed a lot and thank God I got out of it. And then boom, you're back into the rest of real life, and that's never mentioned again. You never find out anything about his church. You never hear from anyone who understands the role faith plays in his life. You never get any actual depth You don't follow the money. You don't find out whether he's active in a church or certain causes. You don't get faith woven into his life to one degree or another. You just get this one word, this one quote that just kind of goes down, and then you're on to real things. In the Wilson story, his voluntarism, his faith, and other elements of his life, including, you know, in some cases controversial churches that he's had some contact with, etc., all of this was factually described. There were quotes reacting to it. Other people got to have their say. It was real. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't just one sentence. It was real.
Now, you just mentioned this in passing, but there has been some association between Wilson and Mark Driscoll. And Mark Driscoll,
yeah,
for one reason or another, for a number of reasons, really, is considered kind of a controversial figure. But controversial for what reason? I don't find,
yeah,
his belief in a literal hell particularly controversial, but apparently somebody does.
Well, yeah, I thought that was the one element of the story that I thought was kind of weak. I mean, the fact that he's not a universalist only makes him typical of, like, the entire world of evangelicalism and the vast majority of historic Christianity. Boy, that's a shocker. When in reality, there are things you can pin on him that are, in fact, more controversial and might lead some people in Seattle to question, you know, Russell Wilson. I noted that it didn't say Wilson was active in the church. It just simply said that their paths had crossed. They had done a few things together in terms of service or activism in the area. I wondered personally if that was a pro-life issue or something. I could have used a little bit more content right there, but I just like the fact that they even tried. I mean, at some point you want to hail when one of the most important voices in modern media, and ESPN is certainly that, when one of the most important voices in our media at least makes the attempt to go deeper than the God card.
Speaking of important voices, let's talk a little bit about the New York Times newsroom. Often, especially here on the 10th anniversary of Get Religion, often people will look at this and say, well, what you guys have been up to is just kind of knee-jerk reaction, pointing out media bias, general media bias against religion in influential newsrooms. How would you respond to that, Terry?
Well, that's part of what we do. But when we got into this, we genuinely wanted to kind of take a slap at the simplistic religious voices that just hate the media, period. There are a lot of folks in the world of establishment religion that essentially want public relations instead of real journalism. So what we wanted to do was hail journalism that we thought did a good job of trying to accurately and fairly quote people on both sides. And we knew going in, and of course the co-founder was Doug LeBlanc, another veteran religion reporter. Doug and I knew going in that this meant occasionally we were going to need to say positive things about the New York Times, which is an incredibly well-resourced newspaper with tons of amazing journalism in it. We needed to say positive things as well as negative. The crucial thing was that we wanted to be able to say, in the New York Times in particular, that the New York Times is an inconsistent newspaper, that you pick it up and you read page after page after page of brilliant journalism, and then you turn the page and boom, you run right into a story that really should have an editorial label on it, and it just repeats the talking points of this or that political or social organization. As its own readers' representative once noted, at times the New York Times coverage of gay rights has resembled, quote, cheerleading, unquote. So what we hoped to do was to be able to say that the New York Times is inconsistent in its approach to journalism and specifically in approach to religion. The problem was that a couple of years ago, we actually had an event occur where the former editor of the New York Times, Bill Keller, only days after he stepped down from that exalted position as kind of the head of the New York Times College of Cardinals, when Keller steps down a couple of days later, he's at an event in Austin, and he is asked very specifically, is the New York Times a liberal newspaper? does it slant its coverage in favor of liberalism? And his answer was very disturbing. He said that the newspaper attempted to do the best it could to be fair, accurate, and balanced on issues of politics, but that on cultural issues, it was an openly tolerant newspaper, which meant it didn't need to be balanced in its approach to moral and cultural issues. And he specifically cited gay marriage. And when I first saw that video, which is still up online, when I first saw that video, my head just spun, because this was exactly what Get Religion had been trying to argue against for an entire decade. We had been trying to say that the New York Times is inconsistent, but it doesn't have an articulated bias against a particular religious perspective. It's simply failing to live up to its own standards in much of its coverage of religion. Then here we have someone only days after he steps down as editor of the New York Times saying, no, we have an articulated bias. At one point when he's asked, are y'all a liberal? Do you slant the news? Are you a liberal newspaper? He said, aside from cultural issues, no. I mean, in this day and age, what are the cultural issues? You know, abortion, gay rights, everything from genetic engineering to issues in education. I mean, the cultural and moral issues have defined American politics, basically since Roe v. Wade. So he's saying he wants to be fair on politics, but not when it comes to religion and culture? How do you pull that off in the United States of America?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religion on this Wednesday afternoon, February the 5th. When we come back, 10 more minutes with him. Stay tuned.
Pastor Todd, I downloaded your Issues, Etc. app for my Android phone, and I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill.
You can listen to Issues, Etc. live or on demand with the new Issues, Etc. Android or iPhone app. You can download these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. in the palm of your hand. Download an app today.
My new Adam really enjoys the app while I'm on the treadmill.
In a Midwestern town not far away, against the encroaching forces of darkness, theologians gather. Saunders, Kuhlman, Ziegler, Masaki, and more. At Christ for Us in the Office of the Holy Ministry, February 25th through 27th in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Register at acelc.net because...
You must unlearn what you have learned.
Join the cause at acelc.net.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues, Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
We are liberal in the sense that we are open-minded, sort of tolerant, urban. Our weddings page includes, and did even before New York had a gay marriage law, included gay unions. So we're liberal in that sense of the word, I guess.
That's Bill Keller speaking in October of 2011. He's the former editor of the New York Times, speaking at the LBJ Library in Houston, Texas. We're talking about media coverage of religion and the New York Times. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for February is a kid's book. It's about vocation, and yes, vocation even extends to our kids. It's called How Can I Help? God's Calling for Kids. Find out more about this book at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Order How I Can Help, God's Calling for Kids, The Issues Etc., book of the month for February. Terry, we're talking in Bill Keller's comments here before the break and now about the former editor of the New York Times. And I think it's safe to say that when it comes to the New York Times newsroom, we're not just talking about preeminent. We're talking about most influential newsroom in the United States. What does it tell you that we hear these kinds of things from a former editor there, from Bill Keller?
Well, I rank the New York Times right up there with BBC in terms of being prestigious brand names that influence the world of journalism. And, of course, in the United States, the New York Times would be more important than BBC. I still think it's inaccurate for conservatives to say that there is a conspiracy in the New York Times to slight cultural and religious conservatives. Instead, what we have to realize, and what I think Keller was saying, is you don't need a conspiracy when basically everybody in the room believes the same thing. That there is, in effect, a certain mindset. And I can't quote you the exact reference right now, just off the top of my head, but about a year ago, once again, the public editor, when stepping down and writing a final column, noted that one of the things that he worried about was whether or not, in effect, there now was what he called a New York Times community, both in their newsroom, in New York, and across the United States, that views the world in such a similar manner that the New York Times is, in effect, tempted to play to its audience, play to its base. I mean, like, we would expect a conservative religious organization like Focus on the Family to emphasize certain beliefs and certain issues that would be popular with its base, with its supporters. In effect, what we had was an employee or a person hired to critique one of the world's most influential media institutions saying, basically, we're kind of the same way. When in doubt, we play to the audience we already have, and we know what we think, and we give them what they want, because we want that too. I found the Keller interview to be the single most disturbing thing that I saw in public media during the first decade of Get Religion.
The other thing that you wanted to point out, reflecting on the history of Get Religion, is that your problem is not really with professional religion writers.
Yeah, right.
What do you mean?
Well, no one is saying that professional religion writers don't get religion. We may have occasional issues with the coverage offered up by some of the talented and experienced professionals who cover religion for some of our media. But Get Religion basically takes the same position as scholars who have studied this subject, is that when you have professional, experienced religion writers cover religion, you get better religion coverage. No, what Get Religion has tried to pound away at is the concept of what we call the ghost. And a religion ghost is when you're dealing with a story that isn't about religion. It's about other subjects that the media takes really serious, like sports and politics and entertainment and business and, you know, the arts and education and science and all these other things. When you get one of these stories, and embedded in that story is a very clear religious element, something that you can't cover the story without taking it into account. Like, just to give you an example that you and I have discussed before, how do you cover the conflict in Syria or Iraq without knowing or telling your readers the differences between Sunni and Shia Islam? It's impossible to understand the story without that. How do you understand what's happening in Nigeria without getting into the fact that the northern half of Nigeria is predominantly Muslim and the southern half is predominantly Christian? If you don't make the religion element part of the story, you're not describing the story. We have the same thing now going on in Ukraine, you know, in terms of the divisions between the predominantly European-facing western half of the Ukraine versus the more Russian element that is in eastern Ukraine. These religion things, these ties, these religion factoids are involved in all of these stories. The Russell Wilson story is actually an example. If you don't understand Russell Wilson's faith, how do you understand why he acts the way he does? How do you understand the relationship, the pivotal relationship he had with his father, unless you understand that literally the ties that bind? That ESPN report that we started talking about today was an example of a story that saw the ghost, that saw the less than obvious religious connection and got it in there. The Seattle was kind of like the second level ghost in the story. So at Get Religion, we simply believe religion is a part of life and that you can't cover most of the world without taking religion into account. The phrase that I use all the time is you can't cover real events in the real lives of real people in the real world unless you take religion seriously. And that's what we've been arguing in favor of for 10 years.
I'm not, frankly not sure how you're going to answer this one. Would we need, hypothetically, would we need, even though they're quickly becoming extinct, would we need a religion desk if all the other parts of the newsroom were able to spot the ghosts, cover them, and knowledgeably report on the religion angle in other stories?
Do you need a sports desk to cover events in sports?
Sure.
Yeah. Do you need a political desk to cover events in politics?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the political reporters then help everybody else when other stories verge into politics. Whereas if you have something in a business story that all of a sudden you realize this has a strong political component and that you've got Republicans on one side and Democrats on the other, you call on your experts in politics to help you cover that story, right? You work together like a team and you take the subject seriously. That's exactly what we're saying needs to be done with religion. Everybody needs to be able to spot the religious element, and you need a professional resource in the newsroom, an experienced, veteran, real journalist who can then help you cover it.
It's journalism. What are your thoughts on the near extinction of the religion desk?
Well, that opens up a whole other subject. Until we find out how to do advertising on the internet, this is going to happen over and over and over in a host of different subjects. I mean, we're seeing major cutbacks in coverage of the arts and a lot of other things. I wouldn't want to single religion out and claim that that's the only problem in the American media right now. But I do think it says something about how our newsroom managers view the world, that religion is one of the last things they cover, yet it's one of the first things they cut. Peter Jennings, the late Peter Jennings at ABC News, right about the time that they became the only broadcast network of the major networks at that point to have a religion specialist, Peter Jennings once told me that he thought it was highly symbolic that right when their religion reports were getting the highest viewer response of all of the stories found on ABC World News Tonight, that when it came time for a cutback, the religion position was the first thing the people in his newsroom wanted to cut. At the very moment that that beat was producing the stories that got the highest viewer reactions.
Do you think
that, what do you do with that?
Do you think that that priority or lack of priority, do you think that what's happening there in the American newsroom is simply a reflection of the general secularization of our culture?
I think it has to do with a unique fear of specific lived out religion. As a country, we're not too scared of Oprah. We're not too scared of kind of a vague spirituality which can be evoked by Republicans and Democrats in State of the Union addresses and stuff like that. That kind of religion doesn't scare us. But specific religious beliefs that show up in concrete ways in daily life and affect how people act and how they spend their money and how they make their decisions and how they raise their children and what they want their schools to respect. Specifics. A large part of America gets very sweaty palms about that kind of religion. At the same time, and it would be bad if I didn't mention this, religious people And our institutions, primarily our schools, which is where I've spent a large part of my professional life working, our schools are not sure that they respect journalism. They're not sure that journalism is a part of God's good creation. They like one half of the First Amendment when it comes to religious freedom, but they're not too crazy about the other half of the First Amendment, which is the freedom of the press. We've got a blind spot here with two sides. The two halves of the First Amendment don't get along very well. It's hurting our coverage. It's hurting how the church views the world. It's just hurting public life in the United States.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series on responding to evangelical proof text. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. We're going to talk about Isaiah 43:19. Behold, I am doing a new thing. That's often presented as kind of the loophole through which your pastor, your congregation can do any new thing they want to, because the Lord's supposed to always be doing a new thing. What's the new thing? We'll find out tomorrow. Also, we'll conclude our series on the Liturgy of Holy Matrimony, talking with Pastor Will Whedon about the blessing of a civil marriage. Well, we've made our plans for the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. It's going to be held Friday, June the 13th, and Saturday, June the 14th, right here in Collinsville, Illinois, just like last year. We've got a list of speakers ready to go. Pastor Matt Harrison, Craig Parton, one of our listeners' favorites, Jonathan Fisk of Worldview Everlasting, Pastor Will Whedon, Chris Roseborough, and Dr. Alvin Schmidt will all be there speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 13th and 14th, 2014, right here in Collinsville, Illinois. You can register online at our website, issuesetc.org. Remember, June the 13th and the 14th, mark your calendars right here in Collinsville, Illinois, at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. I'll talk with you tomorrow.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio. Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Where do we find Jesus in the book of Job? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Job in 4 Not-So-Easy Steps. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. Pastor Ross Johnson has written our Wittenberg Trail feature. It's titled Lutheranism, Christianity's Best Kept Secret, the free online Issues Etc. journal.